About one-third of adults and about 17% of children and adolescents are obese in this country. And it's growing at epidemic proportions, leading to serious health consequences. Now, we all know that regular exercise and a healthy diet are always the best ways to lose weight, but for many people, they've tried and failed at these methods for years, and for some of those, bariatric surgery or weight loss surgery may be an option. Well, joining us this morning to help us understand more about this option are Dr. Howard Simon, the Chief of Bariatric Surgery and the Director of the Central New York Bariatric Surgery Center at Upstate Medical University, and Dr. Taewon Kim, Assistant Professor of Surgery at Upstate Medical University, specializing in bariatric surgery, general surgery, and minimally invasive general surgery. Hey, welcome to you both. Thanks for coming in today.
Good morning.
So let's begin. Who are these patients, and why would they be considered for bariatric surgery, Dr. Simon?
They need to fulfill certain criteria. The first, most obviously, is they need to be morbidly obese.
What do you mean by that?
There's several ways of defining it. Morbid obesity is defined as a body mass index, BMI, of greater than 40. What BMI does is it corrects your height for your weight, your weight for your height, rather. So you can compare people of different heights. So if your body mass index is greater than 40, you are morbidly obese.
So that generally, in general terms, you'd be at least 100 pounds overweight or something
in,
like that?
In general, but if you're really short, it could be less than 100 pounds.
Right. Okay, and that's where that BMI calculation comes in. So generally, Dr. Kim, who are these patients? I mean, can they be any age? Can they be
male, female? Our center has a criteria of age range of 18. You have to be older than 18, and our high end is 65 years old, although I must say for people who are exceptionally fit, we've actually operated on patients who are a little bit above the age of 65. Our demographics tend to be about, I would say, about 80% female, 20% male at this time. But if you poll most weight loss centers, that's probably a demographic they will have about 75% female.
Do you see that these patients also have other medical issues like diabetes and that type
of thing? Well, sure. And I'm going to just comment. The interesting study just came out. If you look at Medicare age patients, the risk that we thought that they had is actually much less than had been previously thought. So actually, in the last 6 months, we've been seeing a lot of patients over 65 and a few over 70. And I've actually done a gastric bypass on a couple people in their late 60s and early 70s. You have to pick the proper patients. And as far as teenagers go, we will pick selected teenagers. There's a different process for younger kids to go through. The other definition of morbid obesity, beyond the BMI, is the diseases that it's associated with. The four big ones are type 2 diabetes, which is mostly seen in at least overweight people, obstructive sleep apnea, high cholesterol, triglycerides, and high blood pressure. If your body mass index is over 35 and less than 40, and you have one or more of those diseases, you're also considered morbidly obese and could be considered for surgery.
So that... And also as part of in that kind of determination, do you consider whether these people have tried many other opportunities for weight loss? Is that part of your consideration as
Actually,
well?
Actually, the questionnaire, we try to find out their weight loss history. And obviously, most insurance companies will actually require that you try some sort of weight loss, a non-surgical weight loss program. Be it Weight Watchers or just a doctor-approved weight loss program.
So that you have to have demonstrated that you have the motivation to lose weight?
Right. I mean, a big part of the success of the surgery component is the surgery. The other component is you really have to change your behavior. It's a behavior modification, and that's a huge component of weight loss success.
Yeah, I think we're going to have a chance to talk a little bit more about that. So I understand that you have kind of a fairly involved screening process other than these basic criteria that you just outlined in terms of who is going to be eligible. You don't just come here for surgery. I mean, people have to be willing to sign up for informational meetings and some kind of counseling. Is that
That's right? Really the first step. We have informational meetings two or three times a month. Sometimes at University Hospital, at the Human Performance Institute, sometimes a community, which is part of Upstate now, a place where we also do the procedures.
So you're doing it both places
both
now.
Both places, that's mm-hmm. right. And the first step is the informational meeting, where one of us We talks for half an hour, 45 minutes, answers questions, and goes through the entire disease of morbid obesity, the surgical options, the benefits, the risks, the complications. And then once the people have heard that, then they send their information packet in. And then we screen them. As Dr. Kim said, first they have to meet the criteria of being morbid obese. That's straightforward. That's objective. And we like them to have had to try to lose weight before. Then you have to have had a history several times at least of trying to lose weight in order to qualify for the surgery. Once in a while, we'll see somebody who's never tried to lose weight. Those people we stick with for 6 months to a year before we're ready to operate them if they've never lost weight before.
You stick with them and you try to see if they can
right.
attempt on their own
That's
to lose
correct.
Weight? I see. And why is that so important? I mean, I think I know the answer, but why do you think that's so important?
Well, it's a motivational thing. Now, it's interesting that the fact is the reason this specialty exists is that because once you're morbidly obese, and I'll just restrict my comments to the morbidly obese, no matter how much weight they lose, the vast majority, well over 95%, always gain it back. And perversely, they gain back more than they lose in the first place. This is consistent. It's true of virtually every patient we've seen.
But you're not talking about people who have undergone surgery. You're talking about prior to any
Correct.
Kind of surgical intervention.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So what you're saying is there's a propensity to gain the weight back. There's that kind of roller coaster ride that they're all on.
It's part of the disease.
Mm-hmm. So therefore, you have to see that they have that strong motivation so that after the surgery, there's some sticking power, so to speak.
Exactly. I think I actually have some issues with people who think that the surgery is going to be the panacea. They have it and everything is going to be great. We actually tell them from the beginning that it's the behavior modification that is the greater driving force, and the surgery is a tool for the behavior modification.
I'm going to ask you to hold that thought. We're going to come right back and talk a lot more about that. We have to take a short break. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Back, Linda Cohen, along with my guest bariatric surgeons, Dr. Howard Simon and Dr. Taewon Kim, and we're talking about bariatric or weight loss surgery. Now, before the break, Dr. Kim, you were saying how you take issue with people who think that the surgery is the panacea. Tell us more about that.
Well, we really try to drive in the point that it's really the behavior changes that are going to make a successful outcome after surgery. And one of the things we try to encourage is even after surgery that the patients continue with their support group therapy meetings, and I think people are a lot more successful when they incorporate that into their overall weight loss regimen after surgery.
And I understand that that's kind of thing that you do provide, and I want to talk a little bit more about that in your program, but sounds like you, here at Upstate, you've been doing, not necessarily you per se, but this type of surgery has been going on for quite a long time, since the 70s. Is that true?
When I was a resident, in the late 70s, early 80s, we did bariatric surgery. It was a different operation, but we did it. But back then, it wasn't part of mainstream surgery the way it is now and has been for the last 10 to 15 years.
And what has changed, in, besides the actual surgical technique, is also all of that additional counseling and support part of what's the change?
I think it's the realization that it clearly is a disease. And that the ability to do these operations minimally invasively and with a much lower complication and mortality rate. You know, back in the 70s, the mortality rate for the gastric bypass that was done was probably 5%. Our mortality rate is now 0.2%.
Wow.
And so that's a huge difference.
Mm. So you see, what, roughly around almost 500 patients a year here?
Yeah, this year it's going to be close to 600, I think.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, so you had a lot of experience with this whole process. And I also understand that when it's successful, people who have these other problems like high blood pressure or sleep apnea or diabetes, those often resolve. Is that the case?
Well, if you look at the statistics, and I'll give it for gastric bypass, well over 80% of people who have type 2 diabetes resolve it completely. The rest are better. Sleep apnea, the people who have to wear masks, about 75% are able to get rid of it. High blood pressure, you know, about 3/4 get rid of their medicine. Cholesterol is about 50% of the people get rid of their medicine. But then the lesser comorbidities, arthritis, obviously gets better if you lose 100 pounds. Fertility is actually markedly improved in women who lose weight. Fatty liver, even things like asthma improve as well. So you can list, there's no body system that's spared by morbid obesity. Things tend to get better when you lose a lot of weight.
One would think your lifespan would improve as well. I mean, maybe not in all cases, but...
We know, we've known for years that the chance of dying prematurely go vastly up if you are morbidly obese. And the bigger you are, the greater your chance of premature mortality. So obviously, the question is, is the converse true? And there have been 4 studies now that show that if you have successful weight loss surgery, your incidence of premature death does decrease.
It's pretty impressive. So it's not, like we said, it's not just calling up and making an appointment. There are a lot of steps involved, and you were talking about an informational meeting. Is there also a psychological evaluation or some way that you try to figure out who your patients are?
I think for our patient population, I mean, me and Dr. Simon, we do a lot of general surgery on top of the bariatric surgery, and for the general surgery patients, we certainly don't get a psychological evaluation on any of them.
No, of course not.
For the bariatrics, there is a component of a medical workup. We want to make sure that medically they can actually tolerate the surgery just like any patients if it involves, and if we think they might have some cardiac issues, we'll get stress tests. Almost everybody gets some sort of sleep apnea evaluation, or it could be an overnight oximetry or something of that nature. So there is a medical component that optimizes their chances of having a successful outcome from surgery. And then there's the other component, which is more related to the bariatric surgery, which is everyone gets a psychological evaluation. They have to come to some of the support group meetings, which sometimes because of distance of our patients, it may be somewhat cumbersome, but we know if they incorporate this into their regimen, they'll get a more successful outcome. So we obviously make that mandatory. We encourage some weight loss prior to surgery.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So they have to make lifestyle and dietary modifications prior to the surgery to demonstrate that they are that committed.
I mean, if we give them a couple of months and they haven't lost a pound of weight, it kind of is somewhat alarming that they won't make the necessary lifestyle modification choices afterwards.
And the danger is, and I think you were quoted somewhere saying that somebody could gain back, even with bypass, they could gain back all the weight, Dr. Simon?
If you look at the best studies that have been done, the best follow-up, about 85% of people with a gastric bypass will maintain the weight loss. I think if they exercise, it's more than 85%. I think if they don't exercise, it probably isn't 85%. Now, as Dr. Kim was saying, we do want them to lose some weight preoperatively. There's 2 reasons for that. One is, if you're practicing the behavioral modification techniques that we've taught, you're going to lose some weight. Moreover, they've all lost weight before, otherwise they wouldn't be in the office. So I look at it, you know, they're going through this exciting period of their life, they're going to make these big changes, they're going to get healthier, and I always question if they can't lose weight now and they've lost it in the past, that they may not be ready. And you know, they all eventually are able to lose weight. I think some people just, you know, have some questions and are maybe not quite ready. We'll see that sometimes.
But even post-surgery, and you've basically decrease the size of their their stomachs, they basically could theoretically graze all day and gain the weight back. Is
that
correct?
That's exactly the problem.
Yeah.
The operation makes it so they can eat a small amount of food and not feel hungry. It doesn't prevent them from eating. And where people get into trouble a year, 2-3 years later, is not because the pouch is stretched, not because they don't feel full when they eat, it's because they eat continuously throughout the day. And no operation will overcome that.
Yes, clearly that's why the modification, as you said, is so important. So tell us about the surgery itself. What do you offer? What are the kinds of surgery?
Go ahead.
We offer 3 different types of surgeries. There are actually a 4th surgery that we don't do here called the biliary pancreatic bypass, which is really reserved for super, super obese patients. But it's kind of fraught with a lot of complications, so we don't do that here. And I think there's rare centers that actually offer that. But for the most part, We do the gastric bypass, of which I would say about 95% is done here laparoscopically. We do this laparoscopic sleeve gastrectomies and lap band or realized gastric band surgery.
Very simple, you know, lay terms. Can you explain the differences?
The realized gastric band is essentially almost like a belt around the beginning of the stomach. And if you can imagine a collar around the proximal stomach, it basically is a partial obstruction of the stomach, so you just don't eat as well. The sleeve gastrectomy is where we take out 80% of the volume of the stomach so that you have a capacity to eat less. And the gastric bypass is the most involved of the three, where we change the shape of the stomach. Essentially, what your stomach is now the size of about 2 ounces of fluid, and we do some intestinal rearrangement to maximize malabsorption too.
So the basic outcome of all of those procedures, though, is that you can eat less at a time. Is that correct? And be comfortable?
Yeah. I mean, I think the basic premise of all three is that with a gastric bypass and the sleeve, there is a hormonal element to that. There's a molecule called ghrelin, which is an appetite stimulant that is made predominantly in the stomach. And by taking the stomach out, or large portion of the stomach, in the sleeve gastrectomy, and also by removing part of the stomach or partitioning part of the stomach away in the gastric bypass, that drive to become hungry is less.
So it actually affects appetite.
Right.
It's an appetite suppressant besides physically not being able to eat as much.
I mean, the reasons are not totally understood, to be perfectly honest.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly in gastric bypass, the effects of gastric bypass go beyond the restriction that you obviously have with the small pouch and the malabsorption. And there's a lot of hormonal changes with the gastric bypass that you don't see at all in the band, and to a lesser extent with the sleeve. For instance, type 2 diabetes often gets better right away with the gastric bypass. So it's clearly not the weight loss, because how much weight have you lost in 24 hours? But a significant number of people go home off their diabetic medicines.
That's very interesting.
Because the hormonal milieu in the gut changes, and your insulin resistance goes away to a significant amount right after the operation of the gastric bypass.
So how do you make a decision as to which procedure to use?
Well, I mean, we try to present it as honestly as possible. I mean, the gastric bypass in most good bariatric centers is still the most commonly performed operation. There are places we call band factories, put bands in everybody. The gastric band probably will not be done very much in the next 5 years. The weight loss is not as good as a bypass, but that's not the main reason. The main reason is about 30% of them have to come out.
Wow. Oh, so there are potential
and the
complications
sleeve, which
down
is
the
a
road.
Restrictive operation, is fraught with much less complications than the band. So I think the sleeve will replace the band. So there'll be two operations.
Well, it sounds like this all can be life-changing, if not life-saving. We should note that this program is the only bariatric surgery program in the region to earn the highest level of accreditation possible, the level 1A from the American College of Surgeons Bariatric Surgery Center Network. And it's rated as the only 5-star bariatric program in Syracuse by HealthGrades, the country's largest health performance ratings organization. Well, thanks for coming in, Drs. Kim and Simon. Dr. Howard Simon is the Chief of Bariatric Surgery and the Director of the Central New York Bariatric Surgery Center, and Dr. Taewon Kim, Assistant Professor of Surgery at Upstate Medical University. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back with more on bariatric surgery, this time from a patient's perspective. So stay right there.